books are being discovered because you're providing tools that allow you to allow your customers to find what they like. And so, you know, we talked about explicit, we talked about implicit, and I think tying it back to retail, what this means is, you know, implicit data. Things that Amazon, you know, did a long time ago, things like people who bought this also bought that. People who were interested in this were also interested in that. People who looked at this product actually eventually end up buying these other products. Providing ways to allow your customers to use the broad set of data that you have about your other customers to help what's more to help them discover what's more interesting for them. Now, when you talk about explicit, this comes back to you know, one of the earliest things Amazon did was provide reviews. But beyond that, you know, as things progressed and they came up with more tools to help people explicitly help other customers, there are things like lists. So, you know, trying to put together an A/B system for your house. Here's the 15, 20 other products that someone who's looking at, you know, this particular receiver is also interested in buying. It was things like all kinds of comments on not just the reviews, but were they helpful? So helping you use your customer base to police your own content. So, you know, one of the things that came up was trust and discovery. You know, are you going to allow your customers to rule the content on your web platforms? And the answer is there is, well, use your customers to also help police and, you know, provide information on what is and isn't relevant and useful. So, you know, I think there's an endless stream of ways that customers are helping Amazon. If you look at a product page on Amazon, you know, over 80% of the features there are powered by customers somehow.
Yes, so I think the role of data is one thing which we have absolutely see through every single one of you. And maybe one way, while you might be thinking about questions you have to the panel, and if you can write them on just a little piece of paper and potentially hand it to people or just give it to me in the front, then we have a few minutes to answer your questions. That's probably the most efficient way. While you're thinking about your questions, let me reflect for a couple of minutes on how data really has changed. If you go to Shenzhen, the woman who's selling chilies on the market there, she probably knows pretty well at the end of the day how many RMB she made. But she probably doesn't have much insight into any detailed ways of how she got to that money which she brought home to her boss. After daily revenues, at some stage we knew in physical stores how well we are doing in terms of how many items we have left. And we moved to knowing how much was sold. And then the next stage, of course, was to have point of sales data as a market basket. From the old data mining store, you know the story about the diapers and the beer, which was sold together. Or you also might know the story about the diapers and the zip code. Do you know, by the way, which zip code is the one with the highest per capita sales of adult diapers? Any idea? It's the south part of Manhattan. And I leave it up to you. Who doesn't have time to go to the bathroom? Anyways, the third point then is that after the market basket, we came up with the idea of having loyalty cards. Why? Because people don't use them, we charge some premium in order to learn stuff from people over time. Huge computational issues if you want to have persistent history of customers. And now we're pushing further. In Japan, notice the Japanese constituency here, there are in-store displays. In China, Focus Media does those there, where you vary what you are showing, and then you measure the effect on sales within half an hour, 20 minutes, or whatever the time window is. So we move from just observing data to doing experiments. Let's for a moment pause and think where the web was 10 years ago. And even Amazon.com on day one needed to know what every single customer was looking at, because otherwise they couldn't have surfed the page. So I think it's extremely forward-looking of the organizers of this conference to start here with taking some people who are from more the web world than most of you are, because for us, on day one already, we had all the rich data, which are a lot of work for you to collect, and we now have 10 years of experience of what to do with those data in order to generate value for the retailers from that. So the data is one thing, the experiments was the second thing, and the success of Amazon, Google, Yahoo, eBay, etc., to a large degree is due to their relentless nature of experimentation, to agreeing on this is a set of metrics we want to drive. It could be items sold, it could be revenues, it could be profit, whatever they are. And then each new feature, code it up, measure how it works. Constant grade and descent, if you will, in the objectives the main strategy was chosen. After data, or data mining, and experimentation, the third element was that of community. That's what you have seen here. In all the cases, leveraging community to help you sell more, to help you make better products. And for me, at the heart of it really is that of transparency. And transparency means that you really understand both internally your processes better, but also externally what your customers think about you. Anybody wants to comment on what I just said while I'm collecting the questions and then pick a couple of them? Please feel free if somebody has some comment to what I just said. Bruce?
One comment I think is that the pace at which we respond to the data that we collect is accelerating dramatically. I mean, marketers have always worried about what people are picking up and looking at in the physical store, but that's a very long feedback cycle that involves people analyzing data, drawing conclusions about what to do next. That cycle is
being dramatically shortened. I think one of the other things that's happening, and the opportunity as well as a threat that is being created with the web, is that your consumer is fundamentally changing. If you look at how an 11 or a 13 or a 17 or a 21-year-old interacts with the web, very different than how we interact with the web. And part of what is happening with the MySpace platform, 17 million users on that platform, 250,000 new users signing every day. Facebook, that we talked about, with presence in almost all the major colleges and universities, what you're seeing is a whole new generation that is being created that is going to interact in a very, very direct way, not just with your sites, not just with your web, but also with your products. And the opportunity is to either exploit that or to run away. What we're seeing increasingly with a lot of companies is that they're engaging with the customer directly. For example, Toyota now has a new car, which actually is being modified by the users before they purchase it, Toyota style. And they're exploiting the opportunity of those modifications, which the consumers were doing anyway, except they were not monetizing those modifications. Those were all going in the aftermarket. Now they are capturing them right at the point of sale. So the opportunity is there to exploit this new generation and their new
case out there. Good, and there's actually one question which is quite specific to that, which is the question about how actually do we get our customers to potentially even design our promotions to us, going beyond two guys in red shirts doing work for a major software company?
Yeah, so, you know, will customers ask to design your own promotions, or will they participate? Certainly they will participate. I've seen this personally from our company and other companies where, you know, customers, we talked about transparency, we talked about quick iterative things where you can learn what customers are doing and then deliver something even more to them. We noticed, for example, that customers were purchasing one certain plan, or they were clicking on a certain button, and, you know, we responded very quickly to that, and we rolled out a promotion. So in that sense, yeah, your customers can drive your promotion if you're paying very close attention to what they're doing and you respond quickly. And I'll say just one more thing, which is we talk about the new generation and what, you know, how the new generation is sort of treating products. Customers are actually, they're starting to be more and more comfortable with iteration and knowing that if a company is very honest and transparent and says, hey, this may not be perfect, but we're going to roll it out today and we're going to listen closely, and if there's something that needs needs to be improved, we'll do it. Customers are, they're used to now seeing the beta label on Google News or whatever. They're used to things not being perfect. It doesn't have to be completely right. But if they know that, at least in our experience online, companies listening and they're iterating quickly, that's they're very comfortable with that.
So Bruce has the next question, and he has 1 minute for the answers. Okay. Read the question, or just summarize the question briefly. What is it about?
Is anyone working on making discovery more efficient for users? So with increasing content, it's harder to find users to find what they want. And I think the opportunity is to combine both implicit and explicit data and explicitly include the user in the equation.
That is, what is this about cultural things? That it goes across cultures because you learn from data. You want to say that? And I give you the last one for trust. How do you create trust? You can do that, right? Because you can call transparency and da da da. And if you want to make something out of this one.
Good. Then we have three more questions here, and that's all I got from you. So I'm not suppressing anything because it's not convenient for me. We have a question here about cultural issues. Things which are true about the United States, will they also apply somewhere else? And let me do, before he's warming up here, a little anecdote from Amazon, which was Amazon rolled out a new version of People Bought X or Support Y. And it turned out in Germany, it did, I think, about 3% better. In Japan, it did 4% worse. And in France, no, in Japan it did about the same, sorry. And in France, it did about 4% worse than before. So A-B test, you run one version, which is the old one, you run the new one, and look for differentials. Germany, 3% better. Japan, the same. France, 4% worse. And of course, all statistically significant. Any idea? Well, it was that the new version was more heavily biased towards American books. Germans, of course, love anything American. French, of course, hate anything American, and Japanese don't read American books. So you always have to see when you find something, actually, whether the cultural effects are there.
Absolutely. One of the countries mentioned here, the continents mentioned here, is South America, and I just wanted to give a small anecdote, which is Orkut, which is a huge social network from Google.
What should I say about the question you have here? What's the question? Make anything out of it.
What I'm going to say is that this is kind of just not really that interesting in terms of growth rates, but to look at the fact that retail and the growth of retail is additive to your existing business.
Okay, so I frame it as online, offline.
So I think because of that access, because of cell phone access, the architectures of participation and communication are omnipresent, and these concepts are actually applicable to a lot more countries and cultures and demographics than you would think. They're just not centered to the United States or even European countries. They're applicable to Asia, Latin America, and all the other major emerging economies.
Thank you. Two more questions. One is here, which I gave to Mike Shah. It's basically about online offline, because many of you live in the offline world and you're wondering how can the concepts that you learned here actually transfer it to the world you live in.
And you know, the question kind of asks more specifically what we think the projected growth rates are in terms of, you know, retail and online. And I think what's more important to think about here is instead of thinking about, you know, how fast will online grow versus our offline, is the fact that your online portion of your businesses are going to be completely additive to the offline, because it enables a totally different kind of catalog, a totally different type of user experience. And that focusing on that channel alone and thinking about how you can create a customer experience that more organically bridges your online and your offline environment, I think will power growth in both sides.
Thank you. And the last stress question is a good question. It's about trust and transparency. And since Steve's company is called Transparency, I thought we'll have him have the last question.
Sure, thank you. So the question is, an underlying foundation for the success of all the customer-driven web strategies is the amount of trust the customers have in use of the content. How have your companies helped customers build trust in your services? You know, I think that one answer that's come through with all of us as panelists has been that by giving real power to the customer, you build trust. It's very hard when the company says, we're going to control completely what we will do with the things you give to us, to really build the kind of trust that you would need to get a lot of good input from the customer. I think that as you give people more and more ability to control their environment, you're going to see more trust that they're going to place in the companies. You know, we do it in a simple way by giving people the ability to find what they want without having things pushed at them, to let them find what they want. But I think good examples were also given today when discussing these commercials, for example, that are being made, where the good and the bad are being shown. I think that if companies allow both the good and the bad things that people want to say about them to come out, that people are going to be willing to express themselves more and really turn over a lot of information to those companies.
Yes, and we see that, for instance, the difference between early social networking software and MySpace. MySpace has 60 million users, and was, by the way, sold for $600 million. So again, it's about $10 per customer. And MySpace has per day about 2 billion page views. 2 billion page views. That's a third of the number of people living on Earth. And why? Because people can express themselves. People can really find ways of belonging. And we are addressing here with Web 2.0, some very deep needs in people which basically were ignored in the more industrial, product-driven society we grew up in. And then, no, some of you are still wondering, what is Web 3.0? So we said Web 2.0 is about architects of participation, that's empowering people to contribute. I use the term Web 3.0 to denote architects of interaction. So for me, Web 2.0 is like lots and lots of dots, 40 million dots out there of people who do something. Web 3.0 for me is connecting the dots. It is getting the people to talk to each other. And for example, I discussed with Newegg, why not if a customer just proudly bought that plasma TV and some other person in the physical local vicinity is looking at that, why not allow the first one to say, hey, if someone wants to talk to me how to set it up about my experience, maybe even come by and look at it, I'm open for that, and then treat him like an affiliate and give him the typical whatever 5% on the sale. So that for me is not only having architects of participation, but going beyond that and having architects of interaction. So on that note, Let me close here by thanking all five of you very, very much for your participation. Thanking you for the interactions. We are all here for another few hours at least. Happy to have more one-on-one conversations with you. And let me also thank you for your attention. That's it.
Especially for those of you who have teenage kids, if you want to know what the consumer of the future looks like, watch what they do, because that's the world of tomorrow. So thank you again, Andreas, Manish, Bruce, Steve, Rami, and Michael. That was a good conversation. I'd like to turn your attention just to the conference schedule. You all have this in your kit. I'd like to welcome you to address these sessions. The content this year is quite strong, quite
thank
timely.
You.
So I encourage you to go to the conference sessions. They're just excellent presentations. They're all on the same floor here, third level.
Good job.
Let's go on. One more thing. Please complete your surveys at this time and pass them to the center aisles for collection by the Wii monitors. Enjoy your day and take advantage of all the great information and opportunities to interact with each other. I hope you enjoy the conference and we'll see you tomorrow.